Catch up on all the live shows right here on africatechradio.com.
Reviews are one of the most important things that is important to everyone. You have to review at every point in time. And it's not just for persons, for communities, for groups, for companies. That's where you hear Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. By the way, just a very small joke. Someone called me on the 2nd or 3rd of April and was like, oh, how was Q1 with you? And I'm like, God damn it, this is not a work. Okay, no cursing, but come on, really? You're not my HR. You have nothing to do like with work. Why are you asking me of... Just like the joke, did Q1 meet up with me? Why are you asking me about how I met up with Q1? Well, so we always do this every quarter when we're like half the year and at the end of the year, take stocks and say, what exactly happened? What are we learning from these things? And this is not going to be any different. Tech About Insights and Africa Tech Radio, we're looking at the reports by the Tech About Insights team, the state of tech in Africa, Q1 2024, with the theme Journey to Profitability. This is the first in a series, and we're going to be looking at everything from funding and investment, regulation, acquisitions, expansion, layoffs and shutdowns, to probably outlook for the rest of 2024. Mm-hmm. First episode, I have Mobolaji Adebayo, a data analyst at Tech About Insights, who's leveraging data to uncover insights and also helping organizations make sense of Africa's digital economy. Hi Adebayo, how are you doing today?
Hi Hansen.
Yes, so just behind the scene, we talked about two things. How frustrating it has been for Nigerians who have NIN issues, and how frustrating also it's been for those who are in Band A, right? Yes, Band A electricity tariff users. So let's take a look at the Tech About Insights state of the tech in Africa. What's this report about generally, and how exactly was the data gathered? What's the aim of the report? Just walk us through what the state of the state of tech in Africa report is.
Okay, yeah, thank you. So the State of Tech in Africa report by Tech About Insights, as the case may be, is a report that provides bird's eye view information on Africa's tech ecosystem within a quarter. So okay, as you rightly said earlier, you're talking about Q1. So between the period of reporting, that's January to March, all of things that transpired in Africa's tech ecosystem. And most times when people talk about Africa's tech ecosystem, first thing they think about is funding. And so we go beyond funding. We talk about acquisitions, which also shows how the ecosystem is maturing or evolving. We talk about regulations because, let's face it, the industry is not as, it's no longer in its early days. So the implications of whatever things these companies or these startup companies do have a lot of effects on their users. So regulations is also something we explore in the report. We also look at expansions. We look at major news reports that have shaped the ecosystem within the period of reporting. So what do we aim to do? So we aim to do with this report, we aim to give stakeholders like yourself who run this podcast, share information to users or to the audience outside. We want investors, founders, even tech workers to make a sense of the macroeconomic effects in the digital economy, that startup ecosystem, trends that we are seeing in the last 2-3 months. And so just help businesses prepare well, could even inform their strategy. Because I was speaking with an investor about 2 weeks ago, and he was telling me that one of the things he looks out for the State of Tech reports is the fact that you get a sense of funding, which sector is getting more funding and all of that, and gets a sense of regulations to understand how these regulations affect the startups that invest in and the sectors. So yeah, that's like a summary of what the report aims to achieve.
Let's dive straight up into the report. Everyone is always excited every year. And I think the major thing everybody does, the only thing that really makes the news most times, is when we talk about funding and investment. Like everyone wants to say, the tech ecosystem did $12 billion in, you know, this year or this quarter or something. And this is the sector that's, you know, really making it big on the continent. Which sectors made us proud, and what kind of investments did we see generally? What trends in the funding space did we see on the continent in Q1 2024?
Yeah, thank you. I think in terms of funding, it's no longer news that funding has dropped. Funding dropped this quarter to about 460.
Are we still in that, you know, that
I think we will still see. I feel like the ecosystem in terms of funding is reverting to the mean. So the period between 2021 and I think 2022 were like the best of times for startup funding in Africa generally, and even across the world. So we had a case of where there was a zero interest rate phenomenon, which everybody knows. I think that's what gave us Uber and the free delivery startups we were seeing pop up. Those things were not free. They were backed by investors. And now it's looking like, man, you need to make this money back for investors. And interest rates have gone up. We look at the Ukraine-Russian crisis. And just generally across the world, most of these Western governments have raised their interest rates. And it means it's very, very hard to get money from investors. I think it was very, very easy to get money from investors in the past. So that's on funding and why we are seeing a drop in funding. And we are looking back at, say, the 2020, 2019. This is slightly higher than 2019, 2020. But I don't think the heights we reached in 2021 and 2022 will be surpassed anytime soon. So I'm sorry to...
Glory days behind.
I'm sorry to disappoint anyone that has high aspirations. In terms of sectors, one interesting thing that happened this quarter was that logistics startups raised more money than fintechs, which most times tend to raise more money. But it's instructive to note that logistics startups raised... Over 50% of the funding logistics startups raised was skewed by moves... $100 million Series B raise.
Oh, okay. So that million,
yeah,
by move was what like moved the logistics sector to the top of the table.
Yes,
not
yes.
necessarily like we had like a lot more startups getting the funding. It was just a major move.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was the only mega deal. So mega deals are deals that are above above 9 digits in funding. That's anything above $100 million. Equals to over $100 million in funding. So Move was the only startup that was able to raise as much as that. And it's also interesting to note that while logistics startups raised more money than other sectors and Move played a pivotal role in that, we had fintechs to raise, they had more deals compared to other deals, and that's like, it's not going to change anytime soon because adoption of digital financial services is still on the rise in the continent.
Yeah.
And even if you look at it, you look at all of the new startups that are popping up, if you talk about food tech startups, there's a layering of fintech and payments on it.
Yeah.
So no matter what you do in Africa, payments is coming for you. You can't go out of it.
Your money has to come through.
Yeah, your money has to come through. So fintechs, even if they didn't raise as much as logistics, on the average, had more deals compared to other sectors. And if we look at a country-by-country basis, there's something called the Big Four. So the Big Four are Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, and Egypt. Over time, in the last 4, 5, 6, 7 quarters, they tend to raise more money.
And that's why they're regarded as the Big Four.
Yeah, that's why they're regarded as the Big Four. And also, it's also beyond just startups. Like Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt, Kenya are among the top 10 economies in Africa. So it just makes sense that if you are trying to build something, you want to build in a market that has like high purchasing power, high GDP, all of that. So this quarter, like Nigeria, Kenya, Egypt, South Africa raised more funding compared to others. I think about 80-something% of the funding. And then we have some other countries like Tanzania, Uganda also coming up. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon because... Move is a Pan-African startup, but I think they have most of their operations in Nigeria and Ghana. So yeah, that's also something that we also noticed in terms of funding. Logistics startups raising more funding, but fintechs having more deals compared to logistics. And then we also have a case of the Big Four raising more funding compared to all other countries.
And if we compare Q1 2024 to Q1 2023, did we do better or did we regress?
I think so. I don't want to be too pessimistic.
Let's say as it is.
In terms of funding, there was a drop of about 40-something% drop.
Wow.
Compared to Q1 2023.
Wow.
And I think what it means now is that due diligence is, I think, all through last year, there were two phrases that I think if you asked investors or if you asked founders, if you had asked founders anything about startups, unit economics would have been the first phrase. What are unit economics? We have to get our unit economics right. And it's just about how are you going to make sense of the fact that you're providing a service to people and how much are you going to charge to them for you to scale. So, and for founders or investors, rather, was due diligence. Like, is this startup saying, oh, our total addressable market is $500 billion when the GDP of the country they think it's been is like $200 billion? All of these things are like super, super important these days. And it's why we are seeing, like, of course, the interest rate has gone up. And now it's just very, very difficult to get funding. Like, the only reason you're going to get funding is because people are sure of what you are building. Maybe you have experience in that sector. So you have a case of, I think one of the investors that spoke at the launch event was saying that now what he looks out for when trying to fund companies is, do you have domain knowledge in the industry you are going to? You could just be a software engineer and maybe you've worked in an edtech, and you say you want to build a fintech solution. It's going to be difficult to get funding. So it makes sense to get someone who has worked in a fintech or has worked in the banking sector to support you, to bring that effort and hopefully you're able to get funded. I think there's been a drop in funding, but it's not because startups are bad or any of these things. It's just because it's become harder to get money, like in terms of investors. Yeah. And people are beginning to look at it that these startups, is there a sense that they could give me outsized returns as an investor? So if it doesn't meet this metrics, it's going to be difficult to get funding. And that's why we are seeing this drop.
One of the major things that everyone talks about after funding an investment is either let the regulators leave us alone, or why don't we have structure around the regulatory principles and, you know, your regulatory processes? How did we fare in Q1 2024 with regulations on the continent?
Yeah, I think with regulations on the continent in Q1 2024, they were super, super, regulators were quite active. In South Africa, for instance, we had about 59 crypto licenses. Because Nigeria has its own rodeo with cryptos.
Yeah.
The whole summer. So like earlier in the year, like, oh, cryptos, all is well in the world. You are welcome to all these things. And then later in the year, oh, cryptos, you are the ones giving us problems with our monetary policy and all. But I just feel like, I think it's also important to state that we spoke with a fintech expert, like a crypto expert in the report. I think you would see that, Donatune. And it's also important for people to note that countries would always do the best they can to protect their citizens. No one is saying crypto is not good. Crypto is very good. Like, a lot of African countries do not have the chance to partake in a global banking space. But with crypto, it's just within 30 seconds, 10 seconds, you can send money to anyone across the world and transactions. But we have to be careful, because South Africa, for instance, issuing 59 crypto licenses means that there is now a framework for you to be recognized by the regulatory agency. And we have to look back about 3 years ago, there was a crypto hack in South Africa where users lost a lot of money. So while innovators or founders could be saying, leave us alone, let us do our thing, regulation will catch up with innovation, it's not a bad thing to say. Of course, in Nigeria, we've seen fintech startups like leverage microfinance banking licenses to innovate and do all of these things. But now regulators are beginning to look at it that, especially in areas like fintech, health tech, people's lives are on the line. If someone loses their entire savings,
most times they lose their life after doing that.
So regulators have to look at it that what's best. We have to strike a balance. And maybe because I'm not exactly on either side, regulators or innovators or founders, one interesting thing to note is that before regulations are passed, there are town halls. So most times, even these founders and innovators, they go to meet regulators. This is what we are trying to build. We want you to understand this is how it's going to impact. And there are a lot of stakeholders talking about these things before it finally sees the light of the day. So I don't expect people to think that regulators are just unnecessarily harsh. Granted, sometimes the regulatory flip-flops can be very interesting, in quotes, but it just means that they are looking after customers. They're also looking after the companies, because people invested in these companies, people work at these companies. If a regulator doesn't do their work well, it could mean that a business dies, a company dies, people lose their source of income, and just all of these things together. And back to the point, South Africa granted license to 59 crypto companies. We had about 19 lending licenses in Kenya.
Yeah, that was a big one, actually.
And that's also interesting because if you look at East African markets, Kenya and Uganda, for instance, there's a lot of digital lending there. Digital lending is on an upward trajectory there. And they are beginning to look at it that, predatory lending issue where people get money and then all your details are pasted, just like we had in Nigeria a while back. And the regulators are beginning to come out on them that you can't do that. That's a breach of data privacy. You should be able to regulate and, people will be able to get money from this year. Applications and all of that, but not at the detriment of their personal, their data. So that's also something that we're beginning to look at. I think up since last year, Nigeria, Uganda, Kenya, they've been up on the news in terms of regulations for digital lending. I think at some point in time last year, Google Play Store took down about 30 or 50 applications, digital lending applications in Kenya. So that's also an interesting one. Also in terms of regulations, but I don't think it's regulations per se. You could call it regulations. Starlink, which everybody has been talking about, Elon Musk.
I think they've had some drama on the continent.
They've had some drama. So in some countries, welcome open arms, like Nigeria, and some other countries across the continent. And in some other countries, like, you're a criminal if you're Starlink. because you've not gotten the license to, Starlink has not gotten the license to operate here. So what do you mean you're using Starlink to access the internet? But Ghana has been able to resolve that. So they're saying, well, Starlink, you're welcome to Ghana. But Starlink has also responded to say that they are going to focus on a certain category of customers when they launch in Ghana. And it's interesting to see how that plays out because I think earlier this year there was this subsea cable issue where for about a week, Côte d'Ivoire, Nigeria, Senegal, everywhere, we had issues accessing the internet. So Starlink users, I think then they just were on top of the world, like, oh, I don't bother with all of these things because you use satellite internet. I also think with time they'll get regulated in those other countries where they are facing issues. And I think it's similar to how when we look back at mobile internet and how it just went boom, blew up in Africa. People are trying to connect to the internet because a lot of people don't have jobs, they're unable to get jobs in traditional sectors, and then the internet provides some sort of level playing field. For you could be in Abidjan, you could be in Lagos, you could be in Abuja, PH, and you could work with people from San Francisco, people from New Jersey, people from London, people from Berlin, and you want your internet connectivity to be strong. And you don't want a case where, oh, can you see my screen, I can't hear you, all of that. And people who can afford it will continue to use the services. That's on Starlink. And then also another regulation is Egypt. At the last count, about 15 African countries have launched 5G. Nigeria is also one of them. Egypt is also in the process of the giving out 5G license to Egypt Telio. That's the national telecommunications company of Egypt. And while it's interesting to know too, they also have to look at the fact that there are concerns that there are a lot of people who can adopt the services, and the license is quite on the high side. It's expensive. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because even in Nigeria, where 5G has rolled out, I don't think people have not had the best things to say about it. I don't think it's as fast as people think it should be, and people have had to go back, say, let me just use my 4G. So it's in terms of regulations, like the internet, 5G, that's for Egypt, Starlink, and it's just what it boils down to is the fact that people are trying to connect across the world, and if their current services like mobile internet providers are not going to do it for them, they would always gravitate to other sources like Starlink, as the case may be, for all the tech bros and just everybody generally trying to connect to the internet.
So let's look at acquisitions and expansions in this particular quarter. Not a lot of people talk about acquisitions and expansions, but most times before big things happen, acquisitions, mergers, expansions usually are the bedrock of the big things that happen. How did we fare?
So in terms of acquisitions, I think acquisitions have been on a steady rise in the last about 2-3 years ago. I've been tracking them. It's interesting to know that this quarter, 12 acquisition events happened. But I also want to state something that by the time you hear of the acquisition news, even if we record it as Q1, it's never happened like a while ago. So it's not exactly, oh, because you heard about this acquisition news in March, then it happened
That's
in March. Because I've been in the pipeline for about 6-7 months because there's a lot of documentation and paperwork around acquisitions, speaking with regulators, checking statements, financial statements, and all of that. But in terms of acquisitions, I think it's great to see that we had 12 acquisitions, and it's not surprising that fintechs made the bulk of acquisitions. Like every time someone is trying to, so I'll give you a reason why fintech acquisitions continue to dominate acquisitions. You know, as I rightly said, like digital financial services still on the rise in Africa. So whatever solution you are building, you have to embed payments there.
Yeah.
There are fintech giants across multiple jurisdictions that want to, say, expand. Or there are payments giants that are global that want to come into Africa. And so what's the easiest way to set up without having to create a local subsidiary and all of that? Just acquire a startup that is already in that space. So you could be, say you're a fintech, super fintech, where you do payments and you're trying to get into lending. You could acquire a fintech startup that is into lending, instead of you having to go through that entire process of setting up a new lending vertical, all of that. And just because, as we said, or as we agreed earlier, that financial services continues to grow, so people would continue to, fintech acquisitions will continue to increase, like no matter what. It's just the same thing with funding. I think there is a cost effects issue there. And one interesting thing about fintech acquisitions is that MasterCard, which we did a case study on in the report, we did a minority acquisition of MTN Momo.
Yeah.
It's about 3.8% for $200 million. They had done a similar acquisition with Airtel Mobile Commerce and the host of partnerships. They did a partnership with Mono recently. They invested in Jumia in 2019. MasterCard and Visa, by extension, are trying to get into, or they've been expanding in terms of investments in Africa's payments ecosystem. MasterCard specifically is interesting because while people use a lot of card payments, all of that, there are different consumer behaviors. So if you look at Francophone West Africa, for instance, mobile money is huge there.
Yes.
But in Nigeria, we don't do as much. It's not embedded in our consumer behavior. People went from using, say, go to the bank, get your money, and then they used ATMs, and now it's POS. POS are ubiquitous. Like everywhere you go, you see POS. MTN already has the telecommunication space on lock. I think it has the biggest market share in terms of data users, mobile phone users, and all of that. And if they are able to crack the market for mobile money, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I saw someone who shared an MTN Momo account with me to send money. And that was interesting.
Where, like, which country here?
Yeah, in Nigeria. It was interesting because I don't think they keep sending pop-ups on my phone with MTN Momo and all of that. I believe that the MTN is rightly placed to dominate that market in Africa, like West Africa, East Africa. Mobile money is also big.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. M-Pesa,
totally M-Pesa holds down.
And it's just a different consumer behavior here. And whoever gets that market first, which could be MTN, could be Airtel or any of them, I think Airtel's on its PSB. Whoever gets that market first is going to dominate, because if people can send money just by having your phone number, that's going to make things very, very easy. So yeah, they did an acquisition into MTN Momo. That's the fintech division of MTN. And MTN has, they have a lot of huge ambitions for that division, fintech. I believe it's a huge speed.
So I don't know who I was having this conversation with, but MTN is really, I think there's a lot in their pipeline in terms of financial services and what they would want to do with the market, not just in Nigeria, but on the continent. And I really cannot wait to see it, because it would mean that they would like hold down, have like telco on lockdown, and then have financial services. It's mind blowing. I can't even think about it. Yeah. Totally mind blowing.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see, because if you travel to Benin Republic or you travel to Lomé, like it's just so easy. I know a couple of people who stay around me who are from Benin Republic, and they're talking about how so easy to make payments, seamless. MTN Mobile Money, Momo, that's what they call it. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
Backend story. I was in Ghana or Cote d'Ivoire, one of the countries along the West African coast, this, I think in January, because I went in for the AFCON. And I think it was Ghana, a stop at Ghana. And I was like, oh, I want to make a transfer. And they're like, oh, Momo. I'm like, I know Momo like Nigeria, but we don't do that. We don't roll that way, bro. We don't roll that way. Like, can I just transfer to you? And he's like, yeah, just go to like Momo. Like, there's a Momo store. Like, just why are you? What do you need to tell someone about helping you make trans? And I go to the lady and I'm like, you know what? I already go to the lady. I'm like, Momo, like, just forget it. I'm done, because I'm not sure how we, like, it's like we're like in a different world from like our neighbors, like all the countries around us. Okay, that's fine. Now let's look at the general theme, which is profitability. Why exactly did we think about this being the general theme for Q1 2024, the road or the route to profitability for startups on the continent?
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of the theme for Q1, we looked at it that when TimeBank released its Q4 earnings reports, they were able to turn a profit after making a loss in H1 of 2023. Mm. The same thing with Suvo, which listed on stock exchange a while back and saw their stock price tumble. I think earlier this year, there's a visualization in the report here. You see Suvo's stock price go up in the last 2-3 months thereabouts. Mm-hmm. The same thing with Jumia too. I wanted to make a correction. Jumia did not make a profit, but they've reduced operating losses. So because they've reduced operating losses, investors or the markets reacted. And then the stock price has gone up. And there is a sense that if they continue to make solid bets, they could become a profitable business. Last year, they changed CEOs, shut down the food division because they said it wasn't profitable.
Yeah.
Just a lot of strategic decisions. And they also laid off workers earlier this year to try and make the business profitable. And so why do we look at it? It's a funding downturn. You, as a startup, you really can't rely on follow-on investments every time. I think earlier this year, a couple of startups, even in Nigeria, were complaining. Their users were coming, they couldn't get their money. And then there was a sense that, oh, these startups were unable to get follow-on funding and it affected their operations. It just means that the cheapest, I think it was an investor that once mentioned, I'm not very sure it was an investor or a founder that once mentioned to me that the cheapest form of investments that a business can get is money from their customers.
Yep. I think I've heard that from Maya of Ingressive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think someone, yes, I've heard that exact phrase too. Yes. Yeah.
So that's the cheapest money you can get. If you make a solution or a service and you have recurring customers, they keep coming, oh, we like it, it's the best in after sliced bread. That's the easiest way to get funding. And if you can scale it, say you start from Lagos, you move to Ibadan, you move outside Nigeria, you move outside Africa, West Africa, East Africa, and you continue to get money from your customers, that's the easiest form of investment for any business. And in the past, it looked like, oh, don't worry, we'll continue to fund you. You continue to grow, you gain market share, and then you increase your price, and then by then everything is settled. Investors or businesses cannot afford to do that. Granted, as one of the people I spoke with in the report said, that it's on a case-by-case basis. Some investors are still ready to say, don't worry, we'll fund you. You gain market share, and then with time, you can dominate the market and do whatever you need to do and make money. But now it's difficult. And the easiest thing for you to do now is whatever thing you've been doing in the past, if you are still a loss-making entity, you want to try as much as possible to start generating profits. You need to ensure that your revenue after you deduct your OPEX, CAPEX, and all of these things is healthy. And you can pay salaries, you can do all the things you need to do from the business itself and not depending on follow-on funding, which may or may not come. So that's why we looked at chart to profitability. And it's also interesting, I think if people go on to watch the YouTube video of the launch event, one of the speakers there was talking about how startups can approach fund profitability. Something else I was going to mention is business pivots. It's also part of profitability. Okay. So if you are in a particular vertical, say you're in a sector, you're in fintech, and you've been doing buy now, pay later, like interest rates in Nigeria keep going up because Cardoso is trying to stem inflation. People are not ready to pay like times three of what they would have paid to get it outrightly. And sometimes it could be even difficult to get money from them with inflation and all of these things. So if you were doing a buy now, pay later play in the past, do you want to switch to something else? If you were in a particular sector, do you want to switch to another sector. And something that Uwem mentioned, Uwem is, I think he's the lead investor at Launch Africa during the launch event. He mentioned that if you're trying to pivot from, say, fintech to edtech or from one sector to another, it could be difficult. But if you have an, if you have an overarching vision, say your vision for building a startup is to connect Africans to the global market, and you are doing that with a fintech, but it's not profitable. If you try to switch to an edtech, you could still have that same vision. The fact that, oh, if you take courses here, you become globally acceptable, you'll be able to get jobs and all. So business pivot is also part of profitability, because, I don't know, the thoughts came to me in Yoruba, so I'm trying to translate it.
Okay.
There is no one way to the market. So if you feel like, oh, this is not the way to make my business profitable, if I pivot to another business model, GoCada, for instance, it, at the initial stages, even up until early this year, they were an assets-heavy business, logistics business. And what it means is that they had a lot of bikes that they owned. Now they are switching to an asset-light model, which is they have the proprietary software to connect people who want to send goods and then drivers who are ready to help them send those goods. What we'll do is we'll connect you, the bike riders, and do you want to send goods. We don't own the bikes anymore. We are not stressing ourselves with maintenance and all of that. So we just want to become a profitable business. If we continue to get large volume of orders and all of that, with time, we'll be able to we'll become profitable. And last year, they also did layoffs. So all of these things just combine together to give a sense that, oh yeah, businesses are trying to be profitable. And also, Mono and MasterCard did a partnership. Like, it wasn't in Q1, it was in April. And one of the things that the Mono CEO mentioned is that they're trying to become profitable. And he believes that with this partnership and some other things in the pipeline, that they will become a profitable business. So I think it's something that is on the watchword for most startup or tech-enabled businesses this year. They want to become profitable. They want to, as you mentioned, they want to make the cheapest form of, they want to get the cheapest form of funding, which is from their customers.
Okay, cool. We will talk about layoffs, because I know that I think 2023 or 2022, one of these years, was like the year we experienced like the, in fact, it was the, there was like a hashtag about it, and it was like the year of layoffs and pruning down of staff or companies. And you know, we had like the Twitter saga and others hashtag. I think that's when the whole terrible bosses thing also came about. We're still talking about Q1 on the continent of Africa and highlighting the state of tech in Africa report by Techabout Insights. I have with me here Mobolaji Adebola, analyst at Techabout Insights. Now, layoffs and shutdowns. This created a lot of buzz in the tech space in 2022 or 2023, because a lot of hashtags were generated, a lot of companies shut down, and you know, it was beginning to dawn on everyone in the tech space and even those outside the tech space that it's not exactly very rosy, all that glitters is gold kind of thing. You know, there will surely be, you know, downtimes, and handling those downtimes and coming out of it, just like pivoting, which is one example that some companies like, I think, Kipa and the rest are, you know, taking, might just be the way to go. And we're not forgetting the hashtag terrible bosses that trended for a long time. How did we fare in terms of layoffs and shutdowns in Q1?
Yeah, for shutdowns, there was just one shutdown event, which is not too bad compared to previous quarters where we still have about 3-4 shutdowns. I think last year was
bloody.
Most of the startups that shut down raised more than $100 million.
Wow.
And the shutdown operations last year was bloody. And one thing that people have to consider is every time a startup shuts down, a lot of people lose their source of livelihood. It's not just the people who work there. They have suppliers, they have partners, and the ripple effects on the economy are just a lot. But in terms of layoffs, this quarter wasn't as much as previous ones, but we had a couple of layoffs. We had Jumia layoff, we had Wasoko, because Wasoko and MaxAB did a merger, some sort, so they had to do layoffs. Layoffs will continue. I believe that layoffs will still continue, because as we mentioned before the break, startups are trying to be profitable. And one thing that's profitability is just basically you're making revenue. are you able to, after deducting the OPEX and CAPEX, is there something left? If there is nothing left, you're not a profitable business. And if you look at one easy way for startups to reduce OPEX, salaries recurring every month. If you can trim down your workforce from 100 to 50 or 40, it means you have runway for the next, say, 6, 7 months, 8 months. Sometimes it's always a difficult decision for businesses to take. And it means that startups are trying to, if they continue to chase profitability, layoffs will be something they try to implement, try to prune their workforce, try to reduce the number of workers in the coming months, which is going to be hard, of course, for the business and then for people who work there. And that's about that for layoffs. It won't be as huge as last year, because last year was just almost every month you're hearing startup layoff, workers shut down. And I don't think there'll be as much shutdowns as last year, because some people are just ready to stay for the longer, like whatever it takes to succeed, even if it means pivoting to a different business model. But in terms of layoffs, I believe we'll still see some layoffs in the coming quarters, because businesses want to remain profitable. And if they are unable to, say you go into 2024 and you have little money in the bank, runway, and you start Q1, you don't meet your projections, your revenue projections, you don't meet your revenue projections in Q2, by Q3 or before Q4, the alarm bells will start ringing. Like, we need to reduce OPEX. And one way to reduce OPEX, or one way most businesses like to reduce OPEX, is by laying off workers.
That's really sad. And I hope that the whole conversation around due diligence, and I know that there were also accusations, allegedly, of founders not exactly managing
managing funds.
Yes, exactly. But I hope we're past that stage and we've learned, from it.
Yeah.
What does the future look like, considering the things that we have, learned from Q1? What learnings should we take from Q1 2024 going into the rest of the year?
I think in terms of learnings for Q1, theme was profitability, talking about acquisitions, funding, reduction in funding. I don't think, as I rightly said, I don't think we're going to hit the dizzying heights of 2022 and 2021 in terms of funding. That's one thing that everyone should have at the back of their mind. I think regulations will continue to increase. We've seen a steady increase in regulations in the last 4, 5, 6 quarters thereabouts. Regulators across the continent will continue to... I don't want founders to see it as coming hard for them. They will continue to look out for customers. They continue to protect consumer rights, customers' rights. Like, oh, you do a fintech, edtech, do you have necessary licenses? Are you doing what you say you're going to do? Are you doing something else that you didn't tell us you're doing? So regulations will continue to shape up the continent in terms of tech regulations. And also something else I was going to mention is climate fund. I know there's a huge push around renewable energy across the continent. We had a couple of VC firms last year raise or get climate funding. So if you are startups in the renewable energy space, renewable energy, climate inclined, they're likely to get funding, because there's a huge war chest of climate funding, private equity, VC across the world. So climate funding is something that is shaping up. So if you're in the renewable energy space, and one interesting thing is we're talking about Band-Aid and the whole power issue when we started. Renewable energy, solar, in certain places. The last time I was in Ibadan, once you go outside of the major local government and you're going towards where the train station is, Akinyele, you see a lot of people use a particular brand of solar products.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think that solar startup raised over, I think, $80 million last year.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you have a case where climate fund is there and they are ready to deploy it. So if you're a renewable energy startup or energy-based startup and you're trying to... you're building solutions for users, you're trying to make them have access to energy. And as we mentioned, you're a tech person, you're trying to work, you get Starlink, but there is no power. So you need solar.
So you need that solar. Wouldn't make any sense at
yeah.
all.
So you need solar. And by getting all these things, there's a business providing the services. These businesses need to scale. They will get climate funding, because there's a drive across the world globally. People are trying to move from fossil fuel to renewable energy sources. So, climate funding is also something to look out for in terms of future outlook. I still believe that digital financial services will continue to shape up the continent. So fintech funding is not going anywhere soon, because no matter the solution you provide for anybody, you need to layer payments on it, so financial services. So yeah, regulations is something that we'll continue to see, like, we'll continue to see regulations across West Africa, East Africa, North Africa, Southern Africa in the next couple of quarters across the year. We'll continue to see funding to fintechs and climate funds, as I mentioned. So renewable energy startups, this is your time to shine.
This is your time. You heard it. This is your time to shine. If you've had a thought around anything that has to do with the environment, anything that has to do with, you know, climate change, if you've not even had a thought about it, start having thoughts around it. Because I know that Kenya pulled in over $200 million when we had the Africa Climate Summit just before COP28. I know there are a lot of funding that's, you know, from COP28, and everyone is really, really open to putting out some funds for anything sustainability. In fact, if you're tying any solution around sustainability, just say sustainability. That's like the keyword for 2024. Like, it's really, really important. Wow, thank you very much for providing, you know, these insights. And we've talked about these insights generally on the continent. We're going to have a second episode, and the second episode is going to do a little bit more deep dive into funding, investments, and into the other areas that we've talked about today. Don't miss it for anything. Thank you so much, Mukolaji Adebola.
Adebayo.
Yeah. Did I say Adebola the first time?
No, you said Adebayo the first time. The second time you said Adebola. So
okay,
it's
Adebayo. Mukolaji, thank you. He's a data analyst at Tech About Insights, and we're doing this together to ensure that the audience is informed of what the, not just the numbers, but the insights and why, you know, the numbers are what they look like on the continent. We'll have more episodes on this, and we hope that you're going to learn something and share feedback to us on socials at Africa Tech Radio everywhere else, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, everywhere else, Threads, and then on Instagram at @ATechRadio. And you could do the same thing for Tech About. It's Tech About everywhere.
Yeah, and Tech About Insights. We just launched a new website. So it's insights@techabout.com. Yeah, so you see a lot of reports, case studies on African tech, data, just reports, case studies, insights on Africa's tech acquisitions, just anything around Africa's tech ecosystem. So yeah, just look out for that. LinkedIn, Tech About Insights. Twitter, Tech About Insights. Instagram, Tech About Insights.
Beautiful. And
download the reports.
Yes, yes, very good. Where can anyone find the reports?
Okay, so
just talk about the report again, generally, and then where the report can be found.
So yeah, the report is State of Tech in Africa, Q1 2024. It provides a better eye view on the state of things in Africa's digital economy or tech ecosystem. So things like funding, acquisitions, regulations. And we also talk to experts to get a sense of these things and how they shape up the ecosystem. You could get the reports on insights.techabout.com. You could get past reports. That's Q1 2023, 2022 on techabout.com/reports. So you could get past reports there, but the new report, it's at insights.techabout.com. It's on our, if you go to our LinkedIn, if you go to our Twitter, you see it there. It's on the bio. You see it on as one of the recent posts, because we're trying to promote the report. We want people to know what has happened in this quarter. So yeah, it's nice. Thank you, Anthony.
Great one. So look out for other episodes, and we'll keep you updated on our socials. Now, finally, on Tony's Tech Side, if at all you are out there, think about the climate, think about the environment. I talked about what's happening with and in Dubai. We had COP28 in Dubai, and I was on a call with someone, an interview with someone on Tuesday, and I said, oh, how's the weather? I asked how's the weather, because everyone just asks about how the weather is when you're trying to make conversation. And Ben said, oh, horrendous rainfall, you know, we're most likely going to shut down things on, you know, here in Dubai. And I'm like, are you serious? And then one or two days after, I hear that, oh, like the airport is grounded in Dubai. And everyone is saying, are you sure we did not make a mistake by not agreeing on many things at COP28? And then maybe Dubai is now getting the effects of these things. So I don't know, maybe just like a witch or a wizard somewhere, something is happening and everyone has to learn from it. Maybe the next city that's hosting the next COP would just be a little bit more careful about the kind of decisions, you know, they agree to be made, you know, made on their lines. And this is not to take out the fact that for the past 2 to 3 years in East Africa, we've had droughts, severe droughts. We've had rainfall in Southern Africa that has caused a lot of havoc. In Western Africa, please, heat wave. Oh, please, I have to take my bath like 3 times every day. And then I'm in band A. I'm paying a whole lot. I'm going through a lot right now. Okay, my producer has asked me to stop and just, you know, finish up. Thank you very much. This is Tony Stekside every weekday, 9 a.m. on Africa Tech Radio. Thank you. Stay on Africa Tech Radio.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to catch up on all the live shows right here on AfricaTechRadio.com.